This episode is brought to you by Ground News.
To the new form of leftism that has infected institutions across our nation, this form of cultural Marxism.
The author of the brand new book, Unwoke, How to Defeat Cultural Marxism in America.
The president who, together with a band of Islamists, thugs, misfits, and Marxists.
Cultural Marxism.
Cultural Marxism.
Cultural Marxism.
Cultural Marxism.
Today, we're talking about cultural Marxism. What it is, where it came from, and why conservatives seem to love talking about it. But if you don't want to stick around for the whole video, here's the gist. Cultural Marxism is a conservative buzzword, one that the right uses pretty carelessly to frighten its voters, inspire hate crimes, and make people think that America is, and can't be anything but, a white, Christian, and patriarchal country. You've basically already heard how the right uses cultural Marxism before. It's used as a label for a conspiracy theory that the right has given a lot of names to over time. Names like political correctness, wokeism, or multiculturalism, all of which have been used, at one point or another, interchangeably with cultural Marxism. Each of these words, of course, means something normal. Political correctness basically means not saying bigoted things. Woke means being aware of structural injustices. And multiculturalism means it's good that there's not just one kind of people here. But to a reactionary audience, they also have a secondary meaning. They're names for a trend in our society behind which the right believes there's a powerful conspiracy. A conspiracy to, quote, destroy the West, supposedly being led by an elite of academics, corporate and media executives, and activists. All of whom the right believe are Marxists. And maybe also Jewish, but we'll get to that part later. The point of using the phrase cultural Marxism is to scare conservative voters, misinform them about progressive politics and who holds institutional power under capitalism, and advance a violent white supremacist agenda. And if you're a conservative watching this video, I know that right now I probably sound like a lefty stereotype. But I promise that's really what this rhetoric is about, and I can actually show you if you let me walk you through the evidence. Why don't we start with a quick history lesson? The cultural Marxism conspiracy theory first appeared in the US in the mid-90s, early 2000s-ish. But it's possible to trace a similar idea back to 1930s Germany and the Nazis. When the Nazis came to power, they designated as one of their enemies something they called cultural Bolshevism, or alternatively, Judeo-Bolshevism. Cultural Bolshevism was a conspiracy theory promoted by Hitler, Goebbels, and other prominent Nazis that a plot of Jewish communists was out to destroy German society and the West. Hitler and Goebbels would make a point of calling Marx Karl Heinrich Marx, kind of like how some conservatives call Obama Barack Hussein Obama, and would repeatedly mention that important figures in socialist history were Jewish, like Leon Trotsky or Rosa Luxemburg. Then they would claim, incorrectly and without any basis in fact, that a few Jewish people controlled the world, the banks, the government, that they were communists, and that they were bringing about chaos, destruction, and degeneracy. All justifications the Nazis would then use for the Holocaust and the mass executions of left-wing opposition during their rule. Here's a couple of quotes of the kind of stuff they said. Anyway, flash forward. 60-ish years later, in the US now, the cultural Marxism conspiracy theory is created by these guys. Michael Minichino, Gerald Atkinson, and William Lind. Throughout the mid-90s and early 2000s, all three of these paleoconservative authors, alongside a few others, wrote articles with some random mix of the words cultural Marxism, Frankfurt School, and political correctness in the title. And Lind's ended up becoming the most influential of the bunch, and kickstarting the cultural Marxism craze. So that's what we'll focus on in this video. Like his two buddies, Lind lays out the basic idea behind what he thinks cultural Marxism is, and why he thinks it's a problem. For starters, he thinks cultural Marxism is to blame for basically everything he doesn't like.
Where does all this stuff we've heard about this morning, the victim feminism, the gay rights movement, the invented statistics, the rewritten history, the lies, the demands, all of the rest of it, where does it come from? For the first time in our history, Americans have to be fearful of what they say, of what they write, and of what they think. They have to be afraid of using the wrong word, a word that is denounced as offensive or insensitive, as racist, sexist, or homophobic. Where does it come from? What is it? We call it political correctness. Political correctness is cultural Marxism.
For a country that's been steeping in Red Scare rhetoric for nearly a century at this point, associating basically anything with socialism, Marxism, or communism is a pretty safe bet to get conservatives to hate it. And you probably already know that this rhetoric hasn't changed since.
The perspective is that anything white is bad because that's the dominant culture. You dehumanize people. You don't treat them as individuals. It is a Marxist ideology.
The cultural Marxists, what they thrive on is chaos. Personal chaos, people being made miserable, people living in fear. If you live in fear, you can't run a business, you can't build your business, build your family. Spirituality goes out the window, and that's how they win.
These are the right's favorite lies. In truth, not many people would object to what's actually taught in women's, queer, or black studies departments. Professors in these departments all more or less research and then teach pretty easily verifiable truths. Like, some groups in the U.S. are marginalized on the basis of their class, race, gender, and/or sexual orientation. Some parts of our culture and of our economy make this marginalization both easier and cause it to feel more normalized. Historical and contemporary facts point to the conclusion that this is more of a feature, not a bug, of capitalism. They're not teaching white kids to hate themselves or rewriting history or whatever. It's all pretty obvious stuff. Similarly, not many people are opposed to the civil rights or gay rights movements and their demands for equality. But conservatives will lie and imply these movements are basically promoting butchering straight white people in their sleep and grooming children, which they're not. And again, not many people object to the idea that if someone says something racist, someone else is allowed to say, "Shut up." That's free speech. But conservatives like to call this censorship, which it's not. But it does sound worse. When pundits talk about cultural Marxism, they'll take these mischaracterizations and tie them to another word most people have trouble defining, a word conservatives already distrust, Marxism. Then they'll take these mischaracterizations, both of Marxism and of various progressive beliefs, and say that they're the product of some hidden elite.
The hegemony of the people currently in charge.
They're doing it in secrecy.
The socialists are in charge of the White House.
Nowadays, conservatives are pretty explicit when they call progressive politics elitism. Lin's a little more indirect with his approach. First, he starts by bringing up a few Marxist academics, Max Horkheimer, Theodore Adorno, and Herbert Marcuse.
The members of the Frankfurt School are Marxist.
Then he says the Frankfurt School is at the root of the cultural Marxism conspiracy.
That the Frankfurt School, I believe, are the origins of the mess we find ourselves in our culture right now. They're the architects of the destruction of American culture as we know it.
When you look at the background of critical race theory, this comes out of critical theory. Where does that come from? It comes from a school called the Franklin School that comes out of Berlin.
And then he tells a story. From the anti-war protests through to the civil rights movement and up to the highest level of government and media corporations, Lind et al. Claim that everything cultural Marxism starts with the Frankfurt School and their writing about critical theory. According to Lind, the ideas of a few lesser-known Marxist academics somehow became the dominant ideas of the elite in U.S. civil society. Everything, basically, thanks to a couple of pretty niche books influential only within their field. For example, Lind says that Horkheimer developing critical theory created all the queer, black, and women's studies departments in universities. It didn't. Then he says these departments teach students to divide society into oppressors and victim groups, and this is why America is divided. That's not what they teach. Then he says this division was the Frankfurt School's intention, because division makes America weak and therefore vulnerable to communism, which is what they wanted all along. And all of this sounds sort of plausible, until you remember that racial, gender, and economic divisions straight up already existed way before Horkheimer. Like, Lind makes it seem as if Horkheimer pointing these things out, which he wasn't the first or last to do by a long shot, made racism and the struggle against it exist all of a sudden. As if this country being divided was the fault of people resisting their oppression, not the fault of the people doing it. He also briefly implies that cultural Marxist total control of society and culture happened because one of the members of the Frankfurt School worked for the OSS, and then two of them moved to Hollywood. I just thought that was funny. Like, they literally just moved to LA. They didn't make movies or anything, but that's his explanation for all the shady shit going on. Anyway, the quick summary of the last section is that cultural Marxists rule the world because some people acknowledge racism instead of pretending it doesn't exist. The cultural Marxism conspiracy would have you believe that behind every liberal, centrist politician saying Black Lives Matter, there's a secret communist. What's missing from Lin's analysis is the truth. We have a government almost entirely made up of centrist and right-wing millionaires and billionaires, lobbied by every major corporation from weapons to pharmaceuticals. Business executives run most major universities. Every econ department in the country teaches capitalist economics at the 101 level to hundreds of thousands of students as if it's the only thing that exists. And every major media company is owned by billionaires and funded by other billionaire advertisers. You couldn't get a more capitalist-dominated system. But sure, a few social science departments teaching the work of one of the most influential political thinkers of the time is proof that anti-capitalists, who can't even get 1% of the vote, are running the country. Apparently, all the power of the capitalist class is just a facade. One day, the communists will come out from the shadows. Just wait. While in the meantime, Biden approves more oil and gas drilling on public lands than Trump. He'll show his true colors one day, though. Trust me. The thing is, the only way you could think that Marxists are running the US is if you, one, defined Marxism as saying things like Black Lives Matter regardless of what you actually do after saying it, for example, pumping billions into police departments, and two, defined being an elite as simply displaying these quote-unquote Marxist beliefs, regardless of wealth, status, or power. That is, in fact, precisely how DeSantis defines it. Institutional power, wealth, influence, heading a Fortune 500 company, none of that makes you an elite if you're focused on regular capitalist things like squeezing more profit out of your workers by any means necessary. This way Murdoch, Koch, Musk, and all their buddies aren't part of the elite at all, because they say socialism is bad. But a few college students staging a sit-in and asking, just asking, for a higher minimum wage and less discrimination are the shadowy cabal threatening the very foundations of America. Not only is this idea of a Marxist takeover not based in any kind of reality, with this narrative, Lind and these other pundits are trying to make it seem like all these different movements for equality and social change from the 60s onwards are illegitimate. He makes social progress look deeply objectionable, and this story about cultural Marxism taking over because of a few books makes it seem like the change happened through a top-down conspiracy of a few privileged woke people, instead of what really happened. Millions of people protested, went on strike, and organized from the bottom up, marching and fighting against the prevailing classism, racism, sexism, and homophobia that brutalized them and their peers, only to achieve partial success, gaining legal equality without material equality, alongside a little more positive representation in popular media, to imply that those who are the victims of capitalism, those who are the most oppressed, most marginalized, are actually behind the curtain controlling everything is just wrong, and contrary to every piece of evidence we have about who has wealth and power in this country. Anyway, after making the claim that the Frankfurt School and a progressive elite are behind everything conservatives already hate, Lind then goes on to mention a few key details about them. One, they're foreigners. And two, he feels it's important to mention that they're Jewish.
How does all of this stuff come here? How does it flood into our universities and indeed into our lives today? The members of the Frankfurt School are Marxist. They're also, to a man, Jewish. In 1933, the Nazis come to power in Germany, and not surprisingly, they immediately shut down the Institute for Social Research. And its members flee. They flee to New York City.
Now, is he mentioning that they're Jewish just because they fled the Holocaust? Maybe. But did he also deliver this speech at a Washington Holocaust denial conference hosted by an anti-Semitic journal? Yes. So, you know, who's to say why he thinks bringing up the Jewish thing is important? Like in other examples of conservative rhetoric, Lind is playing on the xenophobic idea that foreigners are to blame for problems in the US, not a domestic capitalist ruling class.
Cultural Marxism and the Frankfurt School
comes from a school called the Franklin School.
Called the Franklin School.
That comes out of Berlin. These are a group of Marxists. One of their gentlemen fled Hitler, came to the United States.
This framing can be used as a way to impose stricter immigration controls, which the right is fond of.
Order my government to deny entry to all communists and all Marxists.
And it serves as a good way of framing socialist and progressive ideas as un-American, because foreigners are the ones that had to import them. Finally, we get to the core of the cultural Marxism conspiracy, the white supremacy stuff. The point where the cultural Marxism story culminates is what these Marxists supposedly do once they're here.
Gramsci said that the workers can never see their true class interest as defined by Marxism until they are freed from Western culture and particularly from the Christian religion. He also theorized that the great obstacle to the creation of a Marxist paradise was the culture, was Western civilization itself.
For conservatives, the main goal of cultural Marxists is to destroy the West.
In the West, but anti-West.
The forces destroying this country and the West. So everything rides on this.
We don't want them when they want to destroy our country.
When conservatives talk about cultural Marxists, it's not just to scare conservatives. It's not just to imply that marginalized people are really the ones in charge. Cultural Marxism is a foil against which the real America and the West can be defined. Basically, everything that cultural Marxists are, the West is not. In their eyes, the U.S. is, quote, constituted by selective ethno-racial, sexual, religious, and economic characteristics. America's ethno-racial composition is white, Anglo-Saxon, and European. America's gender-sex regime is patriarchal, heteronormative, and centered around the nuclear family. Its religious order is Christian. Its economic structure is capitalist. The values of individualism, meritocracy, and private property are sacrosanct. For conservatives, then, cultural Marxists pose an outside threat to this so-called real America, either because they're foreigners or because holding Marxist beliefs makes you not American according to their definition.
The hectoring lifestyle liberals, the one who worked to crush the American spirit, freedom and independence of mind, masculinity.
Because they are godless, they could care less about the capitalism, property, and they hate the nuclear family.
Conservatives don't care that socialist ideas have been well established in the U.S. for over a century and promoted by Americans like Eugene Debs and MLK. Never mind that America has never been a country populated entirely by white people or Christians. Never mind that who counts as white has never been consistent. Never mind that capitalism is destructive, exploitative, and leading us to extinction. Because these are the things that Marxists believe, they are un-American beliefs. To conservatives, the U.S. has always been Christian, white, straight, and capitalist. And these foreigners and their foreign ideas are trying to destroy that. In other words, pundits that use the cultural Marxism theory are getting their audience riled up about defending America, and then sneaking in that defending America means defending all the stuff we've already listed. Basically every facet of the existing social hierarchy against people whose only real demand is equality, but who they portray as wanting chaos. Because to them, an America that isn't dominated by white, Christian, patriarchal, straight, or capitalist culture is chaos. This rhetoric inspires conservatives to see centrist politicians like Biden and left-of-center social democrats like AOC and Bernie as hardcore communists. And for most of them, that's all they really need to see Trump and DeSantis as the lesser evil. But on top of that, this rhetoric will also inspire a select number of people to commit horrific acts of violence against those who do not conform to this vision of the US, either because of who they are or what they believe. For example, conservative cultural Marxism rhetoric is what inspired people like Anders Breivik, who in 2011 killed over 70 people in Norway. In his manifesto, Breivik explains he was defending Norway against cultural Marxism, political correctness, and multiculturalism. During his trial, he justified killing close to 70 children at the Norway Labour Party summer camp, calling them traitors, quote, committing or planning to commit cultural destruction, including deconstruction of the Norwegian ethnic group and deconstruction of Norwegian culture. The point is, the cultural Marxism theory works for the far right. It gets people to think a conspiracy of Jewish Marxists is behind social progress, and that social progress leads to chaos. It gets them to vote for politicians always further to the right, to ignore the visible power of capitalists. And for a few of them, it inspires them to acts of terror against socialists and those who in any way, shape, or form do not conform to their idea of who is Western, who is us, who is we the people. This is dangerous, and that it continues to resurface is a problem we must address. We talked a lot about how the right weaponizes buzzwords like cultural Marxism in this episode, so I wanted to take a second to give an example of what that looks like in practice using today's sponsor, Ground News. One of the things right-wing media does really well is painting a picture of society that whips their viewers into an angry, terrified frenzy. Let me show you what I mean. Here we have three examples of right-wing coverage of cultural Marxism. Notice how each article employs buzzwords like wokeism and trigger phrases like destroy the West and erode the family. There's never any explanation of what that means or how exactly it's happening, but that's the point. As long as your rhetoric is incendiary enough and makes your reader feel like they're under attack, you don't actually need to provide evidence, as you saw with the examples throughout this video. The far-right playbook is to attempt to make the reader fear for their children's safety, or that their faith is being taken from them by some outside force. Two very compelling emotional claims. And this is the approach they take with every topic. Everything is turned into a cultural struggle of us versus them. The key here is to remember who benefits from this kind of coverage. And Ground News goes a long way towards helping the reader understand what interests are funding each of these outlets. This is something I get asked about a lot. How do I help parents or friends break out of their little propaganda bubble? It's great to analyze rhetoric like this, examining wording to look for bias and determining who's behind each outlet, but it's a lot of work, and none of us have time for that. That's why I always recommend people check out Ground News, because it has a ton of really useful tools to make building media literacy skills a lot easier. Ground News is a web and mobile app that aggregates over 50,000 news sources and offers intuitive, easy-to-understand comparison tools, so you can do things like what we did here, investigate how cultural rhetoric is weaponized. You can also see the political leaning, factuality rating, and ownership of every single news source right in the app. No tedious research required. Now, full disclosure, as a socialist, I obviously disagree with the placement of some of these outlets. For example, I don't think CNN should be placed as far left as it is. But honestly, this might be a good thing when trying to educate your friends and family. If you come at them with, well, actually CNN is a right-wing network, they're not going to take you seriously. Ground News is the perfect first baby step towards media literacy. If you're looking for a way to give your friends and family a great set of tools to understand media bias, who it serves, and how to spot it, I highly recommend you check out Ground News at the link below. And if you really like it, they're currently offering a 30% discount for their Vantage subscription to all Second Thought viewers. You can only redeem the discount at ground.news/secondthought, so be sure to click the link below. If you enjoyed this video, consider dropping a like. If you hated it, a thumbs down. You can check out my other work by following the links on your screen. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time.